Okay, you're back with us at GoldSeek.com Radio for another Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Peter Schiff from Euro-Pacific Capital. Dr. Bernanke's predecessor was recently announced. My next guest says that the new chairwoman will not only refuse to taper monetary stimulus, but might even open the liquidity spigots further. Peter Schiff, president and chief global strategist of Euro-Pacific Capital, author of several best-selling books. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Thanks for having me back.
Let's begin with the soon-to-be-appointed new Fed head, Dr. Janet Yellen. You've gone on record recently noting that investors should discount the possibility that the Fed will curtail the $85 million monthly quantitative easing program, noting further that the QE is now more likely to even be expanded. Currently, the Fed is adding about $1 trillion per year. How do you expect the new chair to push the stimulus process?
Well, you know, I think that we are on the verge of re-entering statistical recession here in the United States. And normally, when we go into recession, the Fed starts cutting interest rates to try to stimulate the economy. Problem is, rates are still at zero. They never raised them. We've never had a situation where the government was not able to engineer a recovery with cheap money, so that normally by the time the recession starts again, the next one, they've got rates up at 5 or 6% and they have plenty of room to cut. But the next recession is going to start with rates still at zero. In fact, I think the next recession is going to start before they've even begun to taper. So what then would be the Fed's response to a recession when it can't cut rates and they're already doing QE of $85 billion? The only thing they can do is decide to increase the size of the QE, maybe $150 billion, maybe $200 billion a month. I think it's going to be all in, you know, when it comes to QE. And that's, you know, it's very bullish for gold. And it's amazing, you know, right now, gold is trading as if the crisis is the debt ceiling. And that if we raise the debt ceiling, the crisis is over and gold's going to go down. I think once they raise this debt ceiling, that clears the way for higher gold prices, because the only thing standing between gold and higher prices is the debt ceiling, because the debt ceiling would mean no more debt, no more big government, no more spending. Washington would have to act responsibly. Those are negative things for gold. What gold needs is reckless spending, borrowing, and money printing, and once they raise the debt ceiling, that's what we get.
We were talking before the show, 47 million people on food stamp programs. As you mentioned, one of the highest unemployment rates in history. I mean, we're nowhere near the Fed's targeted 6.5%. And I think that was kind of a lowball figure. I mean, 6.5% is not an unemployment rate to be proud of.
Well, especially when most of your unemployed have left the labor force and now they're collecting disability instead of an unemployment check. And so they're not being counted as being unemployed, but their only disability is that they can't get a job. But it doesn't count as being unemployed. And the inflation rate is an even bigger problem. And, you know, the gold, when it managed its big rally from 300 or under 300 to closer to 2,000, 1,900, it did so in an environment where most people believe there was no inflation. When we start the next recession and the Fed really, you know, increases the QE, there's going to be inflation, and the government's not going to care. Janet Yellen is basically going to say 4 or 5 or 6% inflation, that's an okay trade-off to grow the economy and create jobs. She might try to say, since we had 1% and 2% inflation for so long, it's okay to have 5 and 6% inflation for a while just to even it out. But when the government's numbers, the CPI is showing 5 to 6%, inflation is probably at least 15 to 20%. And these are going to be extremely bullish environments. I mean, you've seen nothing yet when it comes to where gold is going to go, especially with Janet Yellen at the Fed. And I know a lot of people, including the president and the media, they're all praising Janet Yellen for, you know, warning about the housing bubble and the financial crisis back in 05 and 06. They might as well have just given her the Nobel Prize now instead of Robert Shiller, who barely warned about anything either. But at least Shiller talked about real estate prices being too expensive. Janet Yellen, on the other hand, in 05 and 06, thought the real estate market was healthy, thought it was justified by the fundamentals, and was predicting real estate prices to keep rising. I mean, she was completely clueless. The only time she talked about a housing bubble in 05 or 06 was to talk about why there wasn't a bubble, to try to dismiss the concerns that other people were raising. It was the exact opposite of what the media says. Janet Yellen was just as clueless about the housing bubble and the impending financial crisis as everybody else on the Fed. And all the praise and all the accolades that are now being directed at Janet Yellen, because supposedly she was the one voice that was warning about the crisis in the housing bubble, it's all a lie. None of it is true. In fact, I recorded a video blog which had a couple of bugs in it, so we're trying to fix them. It should be up on my website before the end of the week. And I go over her speeches, Janet Yellen's speeches from 05 and 06, and I prove conclusively that not only didn't she think there was a housing bubble or a financial crisis coming, but she was trying to downplay the concerns that others had. So watch it. It's going to be on my Shift Report video blog.
You know, I think the walkaway point here, you know, the king is dead, long live the king. We're going to see more and more of the same stimulus and quantitative easing and whatever moniker you want to tack onto this, printing mountains of money. And eventually, I think we're starting to see signs of this, cracks in the bond market. The Fed is going to have to monetize much of the debt, the treasury bonds outstanding.
But they're going to be monetizing even more and more. Because we all want to avoid default, right? I mean, the president says, everybody says we can't default. Well, the alternative is that we print. So it's either we default on our debt or we inflate it away, but we can't repay it, right? So it's one or the other.
I'm sure many folks saw that in parts of the country, the EBT system that essentially runs the SNAP food stamp program in the United States, nearly 48 million Americans now depend on this to put food on the table. Apparently, that broke down due to some supposed glitches in the system this weekend. Was this a trial run? Many people dismissed that and poo-pooed the idea. And then we find out just about 5-10 minutes ago, breaking here, that the USDA has announced that they will be curtailing the system if the Congress fails to pass a debt ceiling this week. Come November, as many as 50 million people who depend on food stamps will find exactly $0 transferred to their EBT cards. After having seen what happened in Walmart's emptying of the shelves this weekend when the EBT cards came back online, people were panicking before, during, and after the event. And I'd like your comments.
Yeah, well, you know, the Walmart situation just shows you the basic dishonesty of people when it comes to government welfare programs, because there, people took advantage of Walmart's willingness to accept the EBT cards, even though they couldn't verify the balances, and basically the stores were looted by, you know, EBT holders who, you know, basically just feel entitled. The whole entitlement society that we've created basically blurs the rules of private property and turns everybody into criminals. Everybody's a thief because everybody feels they have a right to take something that belongs to somebody else as long as the government does it. And so once they've, you know, they've destroyed the concept of private property, and people are just a bunch of criminals and they're going to seize that opportunity. But, you know, I'm reading these stories now. More scare tactics about why we have to raise the debt ceiling. You know, Americans are going to have no food for Thanksgiving. 50 million Americans won't be able to get turkey in November because they're not going to have their food stamp cards. So we better raise the debt ceiling. It's just another thing. You know, we're going to default. We're going to do this. Everything's going to collapse if the government can't borrow more money. It's impossible for the U.S. government to live within its means to just spend the tax revenues. If we can't spend a lot more than we collect by borrowing all this money, then everything's going to implode. But, you know, that's an admission that it's all going to implode eventually anyway, because we cannot keep this up. The idea of leaving the debt ceiling in place means we have to deal with these problems today. If we raise the debt ceiling, it just postpones the day of reckoning to some future tomorrow. But when we do that, because the problems are so big that we don't want to deal with them, that we want to kick the can down the road, so we raise the debt ceiling so that we don't have to deal with the problems, all we do is make sure that when we do deal with the problems, they're much bigger because we've allowed them to get bigger because we didn't want to deal with them and suffer the pain, but now we have to suffer even greater pain in the future because we're dealing with an even bigger problem. And that is what Congress is going to do, and the president, by raising the debt ceiling.
Of course, this is a big media circus right now, but ultimately, they have no choice. They're going to have to come to some solution. It may not be what either side wants, and the rancor and wrangling will continue.
You know, I think they're more likely, because they think it's going to be such an Armageddon if they default even for an hour. But I don't think it would even make a difference. I don't think there'd be a big drop in the bond market. I mean, if you were going to dump your treasuries based on default, you should have already sold them. Because default's inevitable eventually. I don't think the Chinese and the Japanese would immediately try to unload their bonds the day after we went through the debt ceiling. So I think this is all a phony crisis. The real crisis is going to happen down the line, whether it's in 6 months, a year, 2 years, I don't know. But it's not going to be because we don't want to take on more debt. It's going to be because we can't take on more debt because nobody will loan us the money. That's the crisis, the lending ceiling. When it's a choice between default or printing, that is when it's going to hit the fan and we're going to have to do the right thing. Default is not positive for gold. Default would mean that we've taken the fiscally responsible tract. That, you know, default means less borrowing, less government, less spending. These are not things that are bullish for gold. And the default means less inflation. What is bullish for gold is that we never default. The most bullish thing for gold is that America never defaults. It just destroys the currency instead, because those are the choices. So if we don't default and we just keep raising the debt ceiling, then we're going to have bigger government, more spending, more money printing, more inflation, and that is the ideal atmosphere for gold. If we default, the debt that hasn't been defaulted on, I mean, maybe if the government were to default, you're going to destroy all those treasuries. They're not going to exist anymore, right? So if you inflate, then the bondholders still have an asset they can sell and buy gold with, right? If you tell your creditors you've got nothing, you know, we're giving you nothing for your treasuries, what can they do? But if the Fed is printing money and the Fed says, we'll buy all your treasuries from you, we'll just print money, well, now you can take that money and buy gold, which is exactly what you would do.
According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics inflation calculator, gold still has a $2,400 inflation-adjusted price when we look at the 1980s peak. Silver, $142. I think you could make the case that those are actually kind of tame figures. Just looking at the 1980s peak, I'd like your comments on what our official inflation numbers say the price of real money should be.
I think it should be a lot higher than $1,200, $1,300, you know, where it's been trading. No question about it. I think gold should already probably be closer to $5,000. But, you know, it's going to go there. It's going to go there very quickly when it does. I mean, you've just got so many people that really have absolutely no idea what's about to happen. They have no basic understanding of the United States, its true fiscal position, the value of the dollar. They have no idea. They actually think the U.S. economy is recovering, that the Fed can shrink its balance sheet. When they realize that the Fed can never shrink its balance sheet, that it is committed to permanent QE, that the U.S. economy is never going to be any better than it is now. It's just going to keep getting worse. The national debt's going to get bigger. The labor force is going to keep shrinking. Then this whole thing is going to implode. And if you don't already own gold, it'll probably be too late to buy it, because you'll probably be too scared to buy it because the price will be rising so rapidly. I mean, and maybe you'll get some, but you're not going to be able to get that much because you're not going to be able to afford it because the price is going to be so much higher.
All right. I'd also like your comments on the central banking disaster we're seeing around the world and even in the United States. We had several presidents that warned about this initially and then throughout the generations. Of course, originally Jefferson, Madison made very stern warnings and comments about lost purchasing power, deflating the dollar, and central banks, particularly central banks. And then, of course, again with Jackson, Andrew Jackson, who was the central bank fighter, and then again with Abraham Lincoln. I'd like your comments on just what these leaders and politicians saw.
No, well, nobody seems to grasp the concept. I mean, they've all got it backwards. Again, everybody is acting like the crisis is this debt ceiling. No, the crisis is the debt. That's why we have to raise the ceiling, because we're broke, because the whole country will implode if we can't borrow more money. But that's an admission that we've already borrowed too much. If we need more debt to sustain the economy and to prevent it from being the next Great Depression, then that's an admission that we're in over our heads, that we already have too much debt, and all we're doing is delaying the day of reckoning, which is all we're doing. And the truth of it is, the real crisis, the real crash, when it happens, is going to be much worse than what everybody is contemplating is going to happen if we don't raise the debt ceiling.
Almost every week we hear of either another nation or another municipality that has written into its lingo noting that the taxpayer or the account holder is on the hook for any and all rehypothecation of the institution or even the nation itself. We just saw Poland announce to its pensioners, we're going to take half your funds, we're not going to offer any compensation. Does that mean that every account or anything that's not nailed down is subject to confiscation other than precious metals?
If you put your money in a bank and the bank fails and you have a savings account or a checking account, you deserve to lose money. You put your money into an insolvent institution. They took reckless risks with your money. What I think is worse is when the government uses taxpayer money to bail out depositors at insolvent banks, because now you're punishing people who didn't even make the mistake of opening up that bank account. People have to be responsible with their own money. And I think that this is a positive trend where governments aren't going to say, we are going to insure everybody's bank account. We're going to make sure that no matter where you put your money, no matter how reckless the bank is, that you're going to be made whole if that bank fails. So put your money into any bank you want. You can get all the interest and other perks of a risky bank, and then if it fails, we're going to bail you out. No. But I think if people start to realize how much risk there is in the banking sector, then that is going to be a problem because, you know, the banks are insolvent. The reason people do put their money there is because they don't care, because they think the government's got them covered. When they realize the government doesn't have them covered, they're going to think twice about where they put their money, which is a good thing in the long run. But in the short run, that'll be very problematic for these institutions that won't be able to hold on to their deposits. When will Americans realize? Right now, Americans are being told, don't worry, your money is safe. We'll bail you out if your bank fails. But the government doesn't have the money. In fact, if the debt ceiling isn't raised, technically, and a bank fails, there's no money in the FDIC to bail that bank out, right? They'd have to let the depositors lose money. But what ultimately they're going to do is they're just say, look, we're going to print the money. We're going to make sure nobody loses anything. How much was in that bank? Rolled off the printing presses. But then the money's not worth anything. So people are going to have to figure out one way or another, if they've got money in the bank, they're going to lose. They're either going to lose their money or their money is going to lose its value. But either way, they're not going to be able to buy anything with their deposits because their deposits are gone or their deposits are worthless. And when people figure out that's the position we're in, they're going to be scrambling to buy real stuff. You think they scramble to buy food at Walmart? Wait till you see how fast they scramble to buy gold. Food goes bad. Gold doesn't. Gold's a permanent store of value.
Tell folks more about what's going on with Euro Pacific Capital.
Sure. I mentioned people be on the lookout for this video blog I recorded that we'll be putting up on ShiffReport.com, which is my YouTube channel, just really exposing Janet Yellen. Definitely listen to my radio show. I talk about all this stuff every day at ShiffRadio.com. Just go there any time of the day to listen for free, or you can listen live and call in from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern time. It's on Internet, Schiff Radio, SCHIFFradio.com. If you're interested in buying precious metals before the price goes up, you talk to my brokers at Euro Pacific Precious Metals. Also, the website is SchiffGold.com. We got great deals on bullion bars and coins. We don't have big markups. We don't high pressure you into numismatics and then overcharge you. So it's a great way to get into gold and silver. In fact, if you are thinking about buying gold and silver and you want to know what all the pitfalls are, you can get my special report at goldscams.com. You just go online, goldscams.com, and download that report, and then you'll know what to be on the lookout for. If you're shopping around for gold, you'll know the most popular ripoffs out there, because unfortunately there's a lot of unscrupulous metals dealers. So there's that. And then, yeah, my brokerage firm is Euro Pacific Capital, europac.net, for people looking to build diversified non-U.S. dollar portfolios. We also run a family of mutual funds through Euro Pacific Asset Management. The limit now on my funds, you can buy my mutual funds with a minimum investment of $2,500. In fact, I just launched my gold fund, which I think it's a great time to buy because now it's actually down. It came out at $10. It went up to over 11, and now it's back down at just over 9. I think it'll be up today because the gold stocks are rallying. And it's interesting, too, that big seller came in this morning. You know, there's just somebody that keeps hitting the market in the mornings, and they don't really seem to care what price they get. So it seems like somebody's been trying to drive the price of gold down. Because normally, if you have a large order to sell, the objective is to get the best price you can. So you work the order slowly, you use a limit. This guy keeps coming in and hammering the market before early in the morning and just bashing it down. They tried that today. They got gold down about 15, 16 bucks. Now it's up 10 bucks. So it's had, you know, almost a $30 intraday rally. You know, they tried to knock it down. So, you know, this could be a pretty big reversal day, especially if this continues. So, yeah, the Europac Gold Fund, you know, a good thing to buy right now.
No, I think it's a great point. And, you know, James Turk told us last week that the London backwardation numbers, we've only seen it backward dated three times during the bull rally here. Once in 99 at that 250, you know, nadir. And then again in 2008 at the lows, we were backdated very briefly. Well, this time we experienced, you know, roughly a month or two of backwardation in September. And according to his work, I mean, this means that the powers that be, the smart money, they're accumulating right now. And they're using all of this weakness as a great launch pad to much higher prices. Peter Schiff, we want to thank you for your time today and I wish you continued success.
Thank you, and good luck. Continued success with your show as well.